Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Pavilion Book Group Studio in Doubletown, USA, it's Necronomapod with your hosts, Mike Stoffel and Mike Mankata, episode 114, F.G. Cottom's Broadma Bay. The story of a man, an old man who goes to the sea. No, that's Hemingway. And now, Necronomapod!
Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good. A little gloomy. It's a gloomy day.
It's a gloomy day. Fall has arrived.
Yes.
And
I'm glad for it.
Yeah, you know, because we're drinking fall drinks here, which we'll tell you about later, and they're not all pumpkin spicy. Thank God, huh?
Right.
Thank freaking God.
How long that trend's going to persist?
Well, I was gassing up a couple yesterday, and this gas station, and repair shop had the same sign that they put up last year this time, which is now serving pumpkin spice motor oil. Last year it was pretty funny, and this year I just rolled my eyes, so I'm hoping this is probably the last year. Yeah. So yes.
So this book.
So you didn't, I'm just, your eyes are rolling.
Rolling like a river.
You did not like this book either.
Oh, you didn't either.
Oh, I like this book.
Oh, you liked it.
I liked it well enough.
Wow, Lord,
tedious. I have to say the returns are diminishing. I like the first book we read by Mr. Cottom the most.
The long time ago book.
Which is a long time ago. And then the one we finished for last month, I like that one, but not quite as much. And I like this one too. But again, not quite as much. So we're heading down a diet.
I think. What did you not like about it?
Well,
as much.
This book seemed to me to be extremely derivative.
Yes, you were telling me about that.
Yes.
So why don't you tell our listener?
So let's see. we'll tell our listener. So this is a story of a man who goes he's a Londoner. And he and his family live in London. He's very successful, and his wife is even more successful. And the atmosphere of London gets too...
When are you talking about the derivative one or the one we're just...
Oh, no, the derivative one. Well, here, I'll just give you the really rough outline here, and we'll let our listeners guess what the story is. Guy moves or goes to a seaside village and discovers that the villagers there are connected to an ancient sea cult. And then he ultimately finds out that his family itself is related to these waterborne horrors that predate human history. Which
sounds vaguely familiar.
Sounds vaguely familiar. So that for those of us who are well read in the Lovecraftian canon, that is of course The Shadow over Innsmouth. Which is probably one of Lovecraft's most famous stories. It's been made into movie versions a couple of times. One was Dagon, that was made in the early 90s by Stuart Gordon, who also did Reanimator, fantastic movie. And it was also Humanoids from the Deep. That was an early 80s, like late night cable classic video.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, exactly. So, this story is uncomfortably close to that.
Well, if we were going to be generous, we could say that he's riffing on Lovecraft, right?
And yeah, he is.
Being an homage to Lovecraft.
Yeah. Another thing that I was discovering, I don't know why this didn't occur to me until this novel, was that he's writing very much in the style or in the school of Ramsey Campbell.
Yeah, it has that. It definitely felt like a Ramsey Campbell book to me.
Yeah, more than the other two that we've read. And that for me was a plus.
Maybe because it's always those little towns. Ramsey Campbell loves those little towns.
Yeah, with dark secrets and things with burlap sacks for faces. Right. What was that name of that book that Ramsey Campbell book we read some time ago? Ancient Images.
Ancient Images.
That was it. About the scarecrows.
Right. That's exactly where my mind went. Or I also went to Darren Shane.
The vampire's assistant.
Little creatures that were kind of like sewn together.
Oh, right.
And reminded me of that too.
Those books have almost completely left my mind.
Wow.
Well, I read 12 of them in like a week and a half.
That's because I like those books, maybe because they stuck in my head.
Oh, that's good.
But and they ruined the movie. So, yeah. So here's the thing. I don't even know where to begin.
How about at
the beginning? I just felt like it. I felt like the lead up, to the payoff.
Yeah.
Was
too much.
Too much.
It was.
And then even the payoff. Was it happened so quickly and with not much heart. That's all I could say.
It didn't have heart.
Yeah. I felt like, oh, my wife and daughter died. That's what it kind of felt like. Oh, well. Yeah. Moving on to the next. Moving on. 5 years later or whatever it was.
Picking up the pieces. You know, my software game is a big success. I'm the millionaire now. Yeah, so the book had a very down ending. He moves to the city with his family, his successful wife, and his two children. A boy who is like, 15?
No, he's 13.
He's 13. He's 13 years old, and a daughter who's 8. And they move there, and you find out slowly and then all at once that they've been lured there. By the townspeople so that they can serve as a sacrifice because the town needs fresh blood.
Right.
They get beat over the head with that. In fact,
a number of times.
In fact, I don't know. Did you ever see the cover of the book or did you listen to it or?
No, I read it.
That's the tagline on the cover. It says it right on the cover.
Fresh blood.
The town needs fresh blood.
Right. Dun, dun, dun.
And so, yeah, they get chained to the rocks out in the bay, Broadmaw Bay, and they get, they drown?
Yeah, they're basically drowned. The tide comes in and they die.
Yeah, but he's able to get their bodies and give them a decent burial.
Except for the son. He saves the son.
And it's the son who is the reason that they go out there because the son gets,
assaulted.
Yeah, hold on to that. I want to talk about the problematic politics of this book. it's a tried and true story.
The small town holds a secret. Newcomers, it's like Stepford Wives.
It's the secret of Harvest Home.
It's the, I want to say the sterile cuckoo, but that's not what I'm thinking of. The
Midwich Cuckoos.
Yeah, it's the Midwich Cuckoos. It's the lottery.
It's the lottery. It's the new season of American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm. The Green Man.
They talk about the Green Man.
What's the movie? The Burning Man. Not Burning Man.
Wicker Man.
Wicker Man. Yeah. It's Wicker Man. Yeah. Children of the Corn.
After I read the book, I clicked around and read a few like online reviews, and a lot of Wicker Man comes up a lot. and the Wicker Man is actually is also kind of a prototype. Wicker Man is really like a British version of the lottery. But it's way more clever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's way more, certainly way more clever than this book.
Book was not clever.
No, it wasn't.
It was just sort of a pie in the face. It was very broad. Broadmaw, perhaps. Broad maw.
Well, you know, the book had quite a bit of subtlety. And I know that you don't, you have limited patience for, authors that attempt subtlety, and when it doesn't work, it's really really tedious. I don't think this was tedious. I did enjoy listening to this book, But I knew as I was listening
to it. You have such a low bar.
I do. Really but I knew as I was listening to it, I was like, oh, Mike's going to hate this. Which, in fact, it turned out to be.
True. here's one of the things I find as we've read two of his books recently.
Yeah.
He does not know how to write a child. His children do not sound like children. Their insights, the language they use, I found that really tedious.
You know, that's kind of weird. I mean, yeah, all of his children are kind of magically precocious.
And super insightful. And, yep. And they talk like adults.
Yes, they do.
And I don't know. I find that just annoying.
That's like, why I thought that the son was 15, 16, even though he's only 13. He's really good at football. He's a smart kid. He doesn't complain, even though he's scared to death to go to school every day. You know, he's just unusually grown up.
He's unusually self-aware.
Yeah.
The children in the book we just read before this was the same.
Same. Yeah.
They did not.
Yeah.
They were like those children.
Yeah. And those characters were like less. I mean, these kids were more, at least
integral to the story. Son
were more integral. Yeah. But
the other thing I found tedious, and now that we're at two so close, is that the psychic abilities that just happen.
Yes.
You know, like, I must be connected to my son telepathically, and he's able to hear my dreams in his sleep, and those sorts of things are happening. You're like, what?
What?
It's just too easy. I guess it just makes it too easy.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind
so,
of
so now
kind
he's got that the connection. Right, forcing the connection, yeah. Right?
Yeah,
and he did that in the last one too. One. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of congruences between this one and the waiting room, and we're not being fair reading them both back to back like this. God,
I don't know.
God forfend. I'm worried about how we're going to treat the next one that we read.
you better watch it.
Anyway, I kind of want to talk about the problematic politics.
Right.
So, what the impetus of the book, the way it starts, is it starts with the main character, the husband father, in a waiting room waiting for his son to regain consciousness after he's been gotten the pulp beat out of him by a bunch of immigrants.
Somalis
in London. And there's lots of hand-wringing through the first third of the book about foreigners in the city and white flight and how, and there's all these careful explanations about, I have to get out of here. I'm not being racist just because I feel endangered.
I have to protect my son.
I have to protect my family. My son. And then there's some hand wavy things that right wing authors do, where they will put the words that would be hardest to say for a white person,
mm-hmm.
they put it in the mouth of a black person,
mm-hmm.
And that happens in this book. And I was listening along, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, am I finding out something about F.G. Cottam here that I don't want to know? And in the end, I'm not sure. Because that impulse is very clearly marked, that impulse to get out of the city and run to the idyllic countryside is very much marked ultimately as a bad idea. Because they're in much more danger in the country.
Right.
But it's supernatural danger. And then you find out that that even that attack was probably motivated by supernatural forces.
Right.
And that kind of takes it off the table. But for an author who generally overwrites the subtle, he remained very subtle on this topic. Like you said in the last episode.
Well, what do you wish you would have done?
I wish he would have just been racist.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, I just, I know this is racist, but I don't care. I'm getting out of town. And then realizing, and then realize full stop at the end that his racism and his blind flight to the country cost him his wife and his daughter.
That's kind of what happened.
It is what happens.
He does kind of paint him to be a liberal racist.
Yeah, he's a liberal racist. Right? Pretty much, yeah.
You know, under the circumstances and all that. Yeah, I mean, he kind of, it's kind of obvious that way.
Yeah, I mean, I know, it's like putting up Black Lives Matter signs in a gated community.
Yeah. Do people do that?
I'm sure they do.
Oh, I doubt it. Okay, unless in those gated communities, you can't put signs up.
Oh, yes, right. It's probably against the covenant. Against the
Yeah.
The
covenant.
So, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the experience of this book. In retrospect, it is it's fading fast and in both my memory and in my esteem. So,
so basically you're saying you're useless for this podcast.
No. I'm fresh and crackling with ideas. So what are we drinking?
I mean, there were interesting pieces to it, like this affair by the mother, yeah, which might have also been magically induced.
Mm-hmm.
The relationships. I mean, there was interesting relationships between the complicated husband and the wife, and the mother and the son, and
I was unconvinced by their reconciliation until I realized that was being manipulated.
Well, and here's that thing where you could go, well, are all the flaws in the book because it was magically induced? Because, yeah, that got settled. That got settled very quickly. It got settled
right quick. Yep.
Then the son blames the dad for not saving the mother. Like, yeah. Oh, you were still angry with her for having an affair. And
yeah. Having an affair with a coked out male J.K. Rowling.
Right.
What was the series of books? A magic boy.
Was it Fillory?
I don't know.
And then there was this ghost. He loves ghosts.
That's true.
And there was this
the St. Abigail school or St. Agnes school girl named
Madeline
with her gray uniform with purple highlights.
Who was one of the girls who was killed?
Yes,
who was sacrificed.
Yeah, we find out. Okay, so you know, in the big crashing,
a lot of good she did.
in that big crashing denouement, where suddenly everything becomes clear about what's going on, you get this whole chapter in which the main guy is reading a diary of
Broadmoor. There's always a diary.
Always a diary.
The last book had a diary.
Yes, it did,
and it's. it reveals all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reveals all. You find out that Broadmoor Bay's most famous son, a very Wilfred Owen-like poet, had a wife and daughter who he had bought back to Broadmoor Bay after leaving London. I think he was in London too.
Mm-hmm.
Brings him back to his hometown. And while he's away fighting at the war, and then they're sacrificed, and then he basically puts himself in the line of fire and is killed in action because he's too grief stricken to come back home. Right. That whole story gets related to us in a diary, which was revealed by the ghosty girl to the living girl.
Right. But she also kills the cokehead.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, the cokehead was kind of my favorite character because he actually seemed real. His flaws seemed very, yeah. very, very, very believable.
Yeah, they did.
But he's dead by halfway through the book. Killed by the ghosty girl.
Scared to death.
And the coke flooding through his system probably didn't help that at all.
Right. So in every, you know, that was, and there was this cop who was also sort of telegraphing that this is going to be bad.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of those moments of dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing. We're three times. They say, well, we need fresh blood. Dun, 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 dun. Dun. You're like, why doesn't.
Take a freaking hint.
Right.
We could always use fresh blood. Right. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. So that was a three right there. Yeah, I know. That kind of obviousness, which drives you crazy. I wanted a little more of that to condemn our main character in his liberal racism.
Well, you wanted to punish him?
No, he got plenty punished. But I don't.
You were wanting to see him punished?
No, I don't. I don't remember him having this realization. It's like, you know what? Every place has problems. It's not being in London or being out of London that's going to going to solve our problems. Changing the living room around isn't going to, you know.
Changing the scenery. Well, he was naive.
Yeah, he was naive. And desperate.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I kind of blame him. And, like, his son got beat up, and he's like, why the hell would I want to live around here if my kid's going to get beat up?
Yeah. And he's also, and maybe you can speak more about this, he was also suffering from depression.
Apparently, like, before, that's what we're told, that he wasn't doing very well work wise and sex wise and I think he was looking for a quick way out, and it appeared that this place was perfect, which was also another dun dun dun. Everything, and then the house just happens to line up perfectly, and
oh yes,
and that kind of stuff. So.
This was not a blood and guts horror novel.
No, not at all.
It wasn't vampire-y. Even really a ghost story. I mean,
there were ghosts, but
it was not a ghost story.
No.
It's a, I don't know, it's an ancient curse story. I guess that's a genre, I suppose.
It's like a Faustian bargain that the town made. And
That's right. They made this bargain, and they have to, and then ultimately.
They're beholden to it.
Yeah. So that the sacrifice that he and his family are being set up to make is the first one that has been had to have been made since World War I.
As far as we know.
Yeah. So every 100 years or so, the creatures come out of the depths and look for a sacrifice on the rocks of Broadmoor Bay. I don't know what my point is there.
Well, yeah. What do they get for it?
What do they get for it?
They get the good bread.
Yeah, they get like
they get all the seafood they want.
There's that weird scene where they go down to the seashore and they do a little dance.
The husband and the wife go to see the town. Yeah. And they're having a ceremony down there.
And they have a ceremony and they do a little chant and they start stamping on the sea. On the sand, and the crabs and lobsters just come crawling right out of the ocean.
Yeah, like what?
What?
Wow. Dun dun dun! That's another moment.
Right? I know. And he's like, "What's It's all good. This just happens. This Broadmoor Bay. It's a beautiful place."
Yeah. It all felt too contrived.
Yeah.
And set up, and it was just like line them up, knock them down. So yeah, I couldn't get into it. And I don't have anything to say about it.
Yeah, it was a bit underwhelming. It's funny though. So when I finished listening to the book, I thought, wow, that was really satisfying. Let me start the next one.
Oh.
I know, and I can't explain it, because now I'm like not so on fire to do that, but I'll probably wait a couple weeks. But
what do you think that
happened?
Is?
That's happened with every book that I've read by him.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. There's something about so I don't read these books. I listen to them, everyone I've read, either maybe it's the narrator is so engaging, which you hated those narrators.
I did.
You really
isn't the same narrator?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, hated him. You don't like the English accent. Why do you hate the British so much?
I'm a British racist. I admit it.
As long as no British people are around. And so I think his narrations are great. I maybe I'm just a bit of an Anglophile that way. You know, I like the there's one little bit, little American comparing British ways and American ways in this book, where they're talking about how the word terrific means completely different things in America and Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific in America means it's freaking awesome, it's fantastic, and in Britain it means horrible, full mm-hmm. of terror. So, and I don't even know what the point of that was, but there it was, and I enjoyed it. It was there for me to enjoy, and I appreciated it. Thank you.
That doesn't make a whole book. You can't like a whole book because of that.
No, well,
or can you? You do.
Can you?
You do.
Or can you? Exactly.
But again, it's sort of the Gothic tradition, right? The slow build up, the slow reveal.
Yeah, the little hints, and the little weirdness.
And they're not little, but they're not little hints. They're big club in the face hints.
Every time, because the author knows that his readership is reading a horror novel, and it's not their first horror novel.
Right.
So every time the narrator says, "Broadmoor Bay is just the most perfect place. I cannot wait to live here."
Dun, 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 dun.
Right? And you just roll your eyes.
Right.
You can't really.
And is he having fun with that? Or is he? I don't think so. I think he's not.
I don't know.
I think he's taking it seriously.
He could be.
Here's the other thing. Maybe this is a thing now. All of the characters would have read horror books at some point or seen horror movies. Wouldn't they have figured it out as well?
That is a conundrum every horror novel and movie has to deal with.
At this point,
because
the tropes are so...
the tropes. Yeah. So you'll have the horror comedies like the Scream series and.
Right.
Scream Queens, the TV show, where all of the characters have seen a bunch of horror films and know you don't go into the closet alone, you don't separate, you don't, show anybody their knife collection. You don't do stuff like that. but in most horror, it's in a world where no one has ever read a horror novel.
Yeah, it really
or
is.
Seen a horror movie.
It's an alternate universe.
Yeah. It's like horror, the world of in a horror book precludes, so in most cases, the whole genre of horror.
It does. And here's the other thing that always is so grating is that if people would just talk to each other, they would get these things figured out.
Yeah.
Like everybody's seeing this little girl. Why isn't anybody talking about it?
Or, "Daddy, you need to read this right now." "Oh, I will, honey, in 4 days."
Right.
My daughter's obviously upset. She has a little friend.
Plus, they found this really cool diary in your house.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you read it?
Immediately.
The first thing he says is, "Oh, I'll bring it to the historian." It's like... And then she has a breakdown because he's not going to read it. Of course you would sit down and read it immediately.
Yeah, you set her on your lap and read the damn thing.
Right. It's so stupid.
Yeah, there were contrivances like that that were pretty creaky. Things would miss. Key connections would be missed like by seconds or by like closed doors. It's like he was writing with a stopwatch. It's like, okay, he's going to come through here and he's just going to miss the seeing this. And they're just going to barely not talk about like getting a description of the girl that they're seeing and all those things that they could have stitched together.
Well, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing I found annoying. So there's this ghost who's there to warn everybody, especially the little girl who she calls a friend.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't she just say, "They're going to sacrifice you by putting you on a rock in the water and chaining you up."
Why wouldn't
she just say that?
Yeah. So at some point, they're going to take you on a boat, possibly a kayak.
Do not go on the boat. Do not go out to sea. Do not go to this rock.
In fact, tell your dad, don't buy the fucking house.
Right. Why wouldn't she say any of that? Because she was the most corporeal, articulate ghost I've ever run into in a horror book. But she left out key
almost, pieces. Almost as articulate as Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense.
Yes. Leaving out key pieces.
Yes.
And she knew she was a ghost.
She did.
And she knew she was there for a certain purpose. And she knew she had only so much time to do it. Yep. So why wouldn't she just say? It didn't make any sense to me.
Clearly she had read, horror novels and knew how to be elliptical in a horror style.
So you didn't really need the ghost.
No.
You didn't need her.
No.
I don't know. She could have used those harbingers to kill the cokehead, and you could have used
The harbingers.
She could have accidentally found a book. That would have been not hard to do. And
Or
you didn't even need a book. They'd just be dead.
Yeah.
The dad would come back and...
Oh, they died. Oh, that's...
All right.
I feel pretty bad about that. I wish maybe I should have stayed in London.
A new life.
Yeah. I'm going to finally get my computer game going.
I'm going to live off my wife's residuals.
Anyway, so... wow, you have the ability. I don't think I've ever been able to talk you into liking a book, but you can just drag me down into reading a book like nobody. Someday I'm going to talk you into liking a book.
You might have. I think you have talked me into liking a book.
I may have. All right. Let's
secret is to go in with disdain to begin with, and then it has to prove itself to you.
I can't do that.
I think you go in already trusting.
If I read page one, I am there. I'm the ideal reader. They have to work pretty hard to piss me off. I have a lot more fun. to my credit.
You might have.
I have a lot more fun.
You.
I'm a pig satisfied.
P-H-U-M. All right. You know what that means?
Oh, it does.
Yes.
Time of the year, we figured this is apple cider time, so we can put a little apple cider.
Nothing says creepy village as apple cider.
As apple cider, yes. Yes, indeed. So what we're going to do here, we're going to make a layered beer drink with some cider in it.
Mm.
So get a pint glass. You can even get one of those British-style pub glasses with the little bulbous thing just before the top of the rim.
Oh, yeah.
Now this is going to take some pouring skill because you want to layer this.
Did you pour these over a spoon?
Yeah. What you do is you tilt the glass, you have a spoon, and you carefully pour it so that you don't get a lot of splash. So you pour in the first layer. The first layer is going to be a light nitro ale like Harp. And pour about a third of the glass, and then get yourself some hard cider. Nothing too bubbly. Don't get, what is that stuff that
Angry Budweiser. Orchard?
Yeah, don't get Angry Orchard by Budweiser. Get something a little more crafty, a little more still, not a lot of carbonation. And on the back of a spoon, pour that in and let it settle. So the specific gravity should separate out. And then on the very top, you want a black beer like Guinness or Murphy's Stout.
Or Murphy's Oil.
Or Murphy's Oil or 10W40. No, like we're going to use using Guinness. And then again, on the back of a spoon, pour that on, and you'll have three layers.
Hopefully.
A lighter layer, a darker layer, and then a black layer.
If you don't, there's no shame.
Yeah. Because once you take a couple of sips, it's going to start mixing anyway.
Yeah. And we're calling it?
The Shadow over Broadmaw.
Shadow over Broadmaw. That's a little diss at F.G. Cottam for stealing from H.P. Lovecraft, by the way.
I was going to call it The Old Man and the Sea. Turns out that's already a title.
It's already a title. How about The Sea and the Old Man?
The Sea and the Old Man. So there it is. Jim Chan.
All right. Well, let's go down to the basement just because it's pro forma. And we're in the basement.
Here we are.
Just like that.
And here's the book. Where we left the last time.
Yeah.
So we're going to read.
Did you already start reading it? Because it looks like there's a bookmark in it.
No, that's just my receipt from when I bought it.
Oh, okay.
We're going to read one more F.G. Cottam book.
Oh, God.
This one's going to be awesome. This one's about a town it's called The Colony. The Colony. And it's about a settlement that disappears or comes back. Sounds kind of Brigadoon-y.
Mm-hmm. Be prepared for song.
Yeah.
I was in Brigadoon in high school.
Oh, well, I think the special closing music should be you singing it.
I know all the songs.
Oh, I think the special closing music should be you singing all the songs.
That's a whole other podcast. All That's right. a horror in and of itself. Horror in and of itself. Terror. Oh, no, well, terrific.
That'd be a terrific experience in the British sense. So, all right, so there it is, The Colony, F.T. Cottam, one last book by the British
Spook Society.
Spook Society. Right. Spook Writer.
In the basement.
Well done.
Well, this is a Wham Bam Thank You Man podcast. I don't even think we got to 35 minutes.
Well, that's just, but there's, it's all gold. It is all gold.
Fool's gold.
It's pure pirate. So what do you got going on?
Nothing.
Yeah, it's fall, so the scary movies are coming around. I saw Blair Witch last week.
Yeah, how was it?
It was as good, if not better, than the original. Mm. But it wasn't the original, therefore it wasn't as good.
Yeah.
It was kind of
We already did that.
And this that you just did is way better than that you did 15 years ago. But still, I've already seen it.
There's no new ideas. No, really not.
Yeah. Now the climax of the movie in the original one, when they finally get to the house, is very quick, and they draw it out, and it's very effective in this new version.
Oh,
yeah, it's really.
Do you know what's there then?
Some kind of Blair Witch of some sort.
Get to see it.
You are left with unrelenting mystery.
Oh yeah.
You get to see more. Whether it's unclear.
Is it wearing a black skirt? And
nope.
No pointy
nope.
hat.
Nope. It's pretty much naked.
Oh.
And scrawny and weirdly colored and vaguely humanoid.
Are you being serious?
I'm being serious. It's quite terrifying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And you can't look at it.
Oh. Because if you do,
that's when it gets you.
Oh.
That's why they're standing in the corner.
Not looking at it. Oh.
Anyway, it's very good. But
is it the same cast?
No.
Oh.
No, it starts off with one of the characters is the younger brother of the woman. I'm so scared. A woman who disappears, and he's trying to find her. That's why he goes into the woods. Yeah, so it's linked. And I think they ignore the original sequel, Blair Witch 2, completely. That never exists in this world. So, which you can do, you know, if your sequel bombs that badly, just like, you know what, we're going to ignore it and just.
It's like some of the Superman movies. Didn't it? They, like 20 years later, they had the sequel. Like, let's just pretend that none of that ever happened.
Yep. And my scary movie festival starting up again. Looking for some good movies this year. Blair Witch is actually the first night of that.
What's your next one?
I think I'm maybe seeing The Shallows. I've never seen Your Next, which is a pretty big horror movie in the last 10 years that I've just never seen. Although that would be the same, that's the guy who directed the new Blair Witch, and so there'd be two movies by the same director, and I kind of try to avoid that.
Oh, that's a good idea, though.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Well, I just got Hulu.
Did you?
Yeah, because I cut the cable. Uh-huh. I cut my cable and it frees up some money so I can watch some other things.
Good.
And they have a whole series of the Criterion Collection.
Nice.
And you know what's in the Criterion Collection? There's two things that there's one thing that I watched and the other thing I saw and just started laughing. So the thing that I saw that's in the Criterion Collection is The Brood.
That's a good movie.
I remember we saw that.
That was like...
But that's in the Criterion Collection.
Oh, well, it should be.
But the movie that I watched was a 1932 German-French collaboration called Vampire.
Carl Dreyer.
And very odd, but beautiful.
Yeah.
Every shot was beautiful.
Yep.
It is weird and dreamy, and
it's one of the that's yeah.
Have you seen it?
You know, I saw it like eight, ten years ago on a Criterion Collection disc.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I couldn't make heads or tails of it.
Yeah, it's very,
very, very strange, and it's all very shot, surreal. So much of it's shot from like the inside of a coffin, it seems.
No, just one scene is shot. You follow the character. He's sort of having a hallucination.
Yeah.
And he's in the coffin, and you get to see, which is a, that whole shot, that whole scene was amazing.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is mostly shot through, I was reading about it, through a, you know, a greased up lens held so many feet away from the, but you know, I was thinking for 1932, the way they moved that camera around, I don't know how they did that, because those cameras were freaking big.
Yeah.
I mean, there's scenes that revolve around a room. Yeah. Well, how the hell did they do that back then?
I know.
So there's some amazing things. It's very dreamlike. It's very odd. Because he had to do it in three different languages, he keeps, the sound is really minimal. And it was one of the, you know, it's the early talkies. So it still has, it has a lot of silence in it.
Yeah.
With music. But yeah, it's restored version. So
yeah,
worth it.
I should see that again. The reason I saw it when I did was not so much because I need to see everything, all the horror movies, which would be a very dark path indeed. but it was on some list. It was some film critic put up, you know, everybody knows that they have to go see, The Seven Samurai. They have to see Citizen Kane. They have to see Seven Seal. They have to see, you know, Casablanca. Everybody knows the movies that they're supposed to see. This is a list of, how do you title it? 20 movies that you must see but might not if it hadn't been for my benevolent intervention. and one of
he doesn't have an ego.
Oh yeah, and he's very tongue in cheek. But they're very like odd movies. One of them was Vampire. By Carl Dreyer. Another one was like The Passion of Joan of Arc.
Yeah, that's a beautiful movie.
That's a beautiful movie. Another one was Alexander Rublev by Andrei Tarkovsky. And these are like film, very filmy films, where it's all about the image and the art and the craft of this plot is usually beside the point. My favorite one of those was A Man with a Movie Camera by Ziga Vertov. Which was basically Koyana Skatsi, but filmed in the '20s.
Yeah,
which is because it's non narrative. It's just a guy with a camera moving through the city, capturing images, and motion, and it's really, really cool. For an hour and a quarter of just pictures of St. Petersburg.
Yes, those were two surprises. I was just laughing about The Brood being in the Criterion. The other one is I Was a Teenage Zombie.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got, too. All right.
So well, what should we do with this thing?
Let's row it out. Obviously, let's row it out to the bay. chain it to the rocks and wait for the tide to come in.
I think that's really easy.
Done.
And done.
Bye.
Bye.